Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 11th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. And we're also happy to be joined by our other frequent guest, the author and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, very well. Well, the pipe in my laundry room has thawed out. We were in a tough situation for a few days. Couldn't do laundry because the pipes had frozen over from the extreme cold that was associated with the winter storm named Grayson, G-R-A-Y-S-O-N, that recently hit Boston. Tell me, Mariah, what was the meteorological description of that storm?
The bomb cyclone, or the bombogenesis it was called, right? Which is a hurricane of snow. That's exactly right.
The central pressure drops at an amazingly fast rate because of just the setup of the thing. So I guess, tell me, DR, we talked about that, the storm last week. It was coming, now it's come and gone. In the aftermath, has it become any clearer whether or not climate effects were a player? Of course, this is New England, so you're always going to get winter storms, right? That's not a surprise. But did climate play at all in this one?
There's been definitely a number of stories noting that this is the sort of extreme weather event that climate scientists have been predicting for decades, and that certain politicians have been ignoring for decades. But after seeing the amount of damage that this storm has caused, it's going to be a bit more difficult to ignore such things, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I think that the what I saw said that the again, the lesson in meteorology for this week, I guess, is that the jet stream is basically a band of air that circles the North Pole, right? And so it goes through Canada, it goes across Siberia, goes around and around and around. And I guess that circulation, that jet stream of air, keeps the Arctic cold air up in the Arctic where it belongs. But given climate change, the path of that jet stream gets to meander a little bit. I don't know if you saw any of that, Mariah, but the path meanders a little bit and it weakens, and it allows the cold air to come down into the lower latitudes. And that's why we got this extreme cold on one side, say on the land side, at the same time that there was a storm, sort of a middling winter storm coming up the Atlantic, and the combination of the very cold air from the North Pole and the storm coming up from the south turned it into this dramatically intense storm, right? Mariah, did you see anything about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing I think that you have factoring into all of this is that Boston and parts of the East Coast are actually supposed to get, you know, 25% higher increases in sea level than other parts of the planet, mm-hmm. Due to sort of the ice melting in the South Pole and the resulting gravitational pull on the ocean. It's sort of like this bathtub effect where you get water sloshing over. And I think that probably contributed somewhat to the storm, as well as to some flooding that happened that was not expected.
Yeah, tell me more about that. I mean, so I was looking at news reports and had, there was water dripping down the aquarium T-stop steps, right, into the T.
Yeah. So it was a record tide, and it sent waves surging through the streets of downtown Boston, so the Boston Globe. I think that the city knows that this can happen, but it's still, and they have a lot of, from what I read, a lot of the buildings were prepared for it. So mm-hmm. there was not as much damage in the newer buildings. There wasn't as much damage as could have been, because they have done a lot of things to make it so that the important sort of generators and stuff are all on top of the buildings and so on and so forth.
The thing I saw said that the storm itself. So here's the other thing. Just since I can't avoid talking about things like this, when the storm surge, when you have this very, very low pressure, it's essentially the equivalent of when you were a kid and you took a glass of water and turned it upside down in the kitchen sink and lifted the glass out and the water would stay inside the glass, right? When you have this storm of a low pressure area, you get this big dome of water underneath it, and that gets dragged by the low pressure area, and that's what causes the storm surge. So what I heard was that this storm had about a 3-foot storm surge, that is a 3-foot dome of water you'd expect from it. But that it happened at what's called an astronomical high tide. It was almost exactly matched up with the moon, the position of the moon, so that you get an extra 2 feet from the tide, plus about a foot of sea level rise that has occurred since these buildings in downtown Boston were built over the last century or so. So you ended up with like this 7-foot high increase in the water that basically took people by surprise, right? It was all down around the south end, and there were people driving through, fire trucks driving through hip-deep water, right?
Yeah. I would imagine it's only going to be worse, right? We're supposed to have 58-degree weather tomorrow, right? So that's going to make all of the snow we have melt. And then on top of that, we're supposed to get another big rainstorm. I would anticipate that the next couple of days are... We're going to have a little more flooding. Yeah, it's going to be pretty sloppy.
Well, what I saw, that Mayor Walsh came out at the time of this, I guess Thursday afternoon or Friday morning, basically saying that this is what climate change looks like, and we better get used to it. Did you see any of that, DR? Did you see that little bit of tape?
Yes, Walsh was quite outspoken about the connection between the flooding and climate change, basically making the point that, you know, this is what we should expect more of in the future. Mm-hmm. And it is something to where people should pay attention to where things are being built, where things shouldn't be built. Are developers really going to show a sort of foresight in terms of where they decide to place new buildings, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how much they're willing to invest in terms of making sure that there is resilience and that the new glorious buildings they put up don't get flooded out.
Right, and I guess, the real issue is whether or not the bankers who are going to finance, give a developer a 30-year loan, if the banker says, I trust that this building is going to be there in 30 years, so that I'm going to get my money back. I mean, that's really where Mariah, tell me, this storm in Boston is the very beginning of 2018, but my understanding is that 2017 was a fairly damaging year expensive year for extreme weather events as well, right?
Right. Yeah. So it was actually one of the most expensive year ever. Mm-hmm. There were 16 extreme weather events.
Nationwide in the U.S.
Nationwide in the U.S. 16 extreme weather events, which is, I think, tied for the second highest extreme weather events. The other was, I believe, in 2011. Yeah, 2011. Mm-hmm. But the damage exceeded $300 billion. So it's the costliest year on record. Wow. And interestingly enough, it also happens to be, I was reading that the major news cycles sort of didn't accurately report on climate change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The climate journalists, a lot of them would sort of talk about these extreme weather events and instead would sort of talk about maybe Trump and not, it was not in these, some, in a lot of these extreme weather events, they did not mention climate change. And I was really happy to see the Boston Globe clearly talking about that and in this most recent
storm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading an article about how, all of the major news Wall Street Journal, New York Times, USA Today, just were not, they were, Trump always appeared in their climate articles 4.7 times per article about climate change.
Really?
Yeah. So,
really?
There was no Trump in the Boston Globe article, and there was lots of climate change really linked to this.
Interesting. I suppose our 45th president is a good foil to any discussion of climate change, right? It's the sort of opposition. Well, I think that so what I heard here in Boston, coming back to our own experience here in Boston, is this when the floods showed up on TV, all of a sudden people started talking about seawalls, or what we in the climate business call adaptation, right? That an immediate discussion about what kind of seawall we need to build to prevent this from happening going forward, right? Did either of you see anything, any discussion about seawalls?
Yes, there were, I did see a number of pieces touching upon this. And again, when you see these pieces, you just say to yourself, you know, we wouldn't be having to build seawalls if we had taken action 30 years ago when Jim Hansen warned us to take some action. So, you know, what's the old saying? Sin in haste, repent in leisure, that sort of thing. It's like, well, it's going to take a long, long time to deal with things that could have been avoided if we just listened earlier on.
Well, I guess, I mean, that is true, but it's also, you know, basically history. Right now, we have discussions of resilience, community resilience. We talk about, you know, how do we handle floods? We talk about seawalls to try and prevent it, and that's kind of adaptation. But I guess I would go to your point and restate your point, DR, that we need to include a discussion of mitigation, which is to say reduction in carbon pollution to reduce the whole effect, as opposed to building a, you know, having a debate about whether we build a concrete seawall or a seaweed berm in the south end of Boston, right? I mean, where do you guys stand on that? I mean, the relative merits of protecting Boston versus the need to reduce carbon pollution in general.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that, but I think it's like trying to move a big cruise ship while you're swimming, right? I mean, you're like, yeah, this is the direction we need to go, cruise ship, but you know, trying to get it to go that way, I feel like it's hard unless people start seeing, wow, okay, Boston's flooding. Mm-hmm. Wow, okay, mm-hmm. So we should have a carbon tax. We should start curbing carbon emissions.
I mean, would you argue that if people have to pay for a seawall, they might start looking around at other ways to reduce the impact, which then leads them back to mitigation?
No? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's very possible. I wish that it wasn't that way, but, you know.
I guess. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that the discussions of adaptation are a path into discussions of mitigation. And God knows we need I see a distinction between community resilience in the face of these things versus these sort of mega projects about building a seawall. Right? The idea of having a system by which in a neighborhood you go check on the old people on a hot day and make sure they're not in trouble, right? I mean, that's resilience. I mean, you have a food supply, you have microgrids. That's one thing. The seawall stuff is a mega project adaptation program, which I think is different. I mean, maybe it's just a splitting hairs. I don't know. But I think resilience is important.
I think that the problem with adaptation is that, I mean, look at Florida, right? They had to build all those, you know, different ways to help drain Miami to help drain the city of water. And it worked for a little while, but because the seas keep rising, you know, if you don't stop putting carbon into the air, you're not going to stop the rising seas. And so you can adapt all you want, but you're just going to have to keep adapting more and more and more.
You have to design your seawall to be sort of to go up, to be raised very easily, right?
Right, right. Exactly.
Interesting,
yeah.
Interesting. Well, I think that the question of Grayson and the storm. I keep saying for some reason I've landed on Grayson as the description for the storm. This bomb cyclone that we just went through seems to have been a fairly, as you say, Mariah, fairly clearly defined climate event in people's minds. Certainly in the globe, which drives a lot of discussion, right? This is a climate thing we got to look at. And it surprised a lot of people, and I presume that it will drive more discussion here in Boston going forward about how do we adapt to it, right? And how do we mitigate it? So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we are at, we have consumed our allotted 15 minutes. Who's the artist? 15 minutes of fame.
Warhol.
Andy Warhol. We've used up our 15 minutes of fame. We have to stop now. But so what we'll do is tell everybody, we'll put out some links to some of the stuff we talked about, things that happen here in Boston, but they connect up to these much larger discussions about sort of the morality of adaptation versus mitigation, I think. And so we'll put up some links to that kind of stuff at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. Of course, you can find us on iTunes. And if you go to iTunes or if you go to any of your podcasts, listening directories, please rank us. It helps us get up in the ratings and it helps other people find us. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Mariah.
Always a pleasure.
We'll talk to you guys again soon. And to everybody out there listening, take care. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.